Happy Saturday afternoon, folks. This is Matt Minnick and Michael Rogner coming to you on the Tomahawk Nation Hoops Dedicated podcast, coming after a big Miami win. That's a sweep, a season sweep of the Miami Hurricanes. Go ahead and hit the explicit button on this one, Rogner, because fuck Miami, fuck Miami. Never going to miss up a chance to say that. We got a good episode, I think, coming here because another Saturday, Monday turnaround, quick turnaround for Florida State. So we just had a blowout 99-81 victory over the Hurricanes from down south. We have Duke coming up in, gosh, about maybe 30 hours or 36 hours or so from now. And then we've also had – there was a selection kind of mid-season reveal from the NCAA tournament committee. Some news and notes on some recruits and some other updates. So it's a pretty good little Saturday we got here, Michael. How do you think about the game?
I was not happy at all during the first half, but then the second half was a whole lot of fun. And, you know, now that I've had, it's like an hour or two after the game now that I've had a little time to kind of think about it and think about what Ham was doing, I'm a lot happier about the game now. You know, I think that, FSU not only played well, but also kind of accomplished, what they needed to accomplish heading into a big Duke game where all of the players could have, you know, very easily, overlooked Miami and been all fired up for Duke, and Florida State could have come out flat. You know, we obviously didn't do that. The offense was really just humming the whole game. The defense sucked in the first half, but we got some issues sorted out, which we can talk about in the second half. So that was good to see. And it's always fun to beat Miami. That's five straight over Miami, and I think seven of the last eight. So six straight against Florida, five straight against Miami. You know, it's a good place to be for a Seminole fan.
It is. I mean, FSU has owned the University of Florida lately. Was it five straight over Mike White and the Fighting Gators, who appear to be heading for another loss today? Thanks for nothing, UF, on the strength of schedule there. We really owned Jim Larrañaga and Miami, particularly since they got kind of caught red-handed with in the cookie jar there with some of the Adidas scandal stuff. And then, you know, we've also owned Clemson of late as well. So certainly doing a number on the rivalries on the hard court. Let's jump in with a few things on the mat. You talked about the adjustment that Florida State made on defense. So the first half, I'll just hit you with a couple of numbers here. This is Miami's shooting in the first half, right? 16 for 31 for a smoking 51.6%. Should be noted that Florida State was actually 58% in the first half. So even scorching the Nets even more, but Miami also took 12 free throws there in the first half, 11 for 12 from the line, and they were shooting 40% from three. All that led to a 50 to 47 barn burner at halftime. What was Miami able to find success in the first half? And then, so then the second half, Miami shoots 30% from the field, just 10 of 33. What kind of adjustments was Leonard Hamilton and company able to make?
Yeah, that first half, Miami did a good job. You know, basically the game plan that we've seen against Florida State all year is spread them out, attack off the drive, hope that you don't turn the ball over 100 times against FSU's pressure. Miami did a good job. Not turning the ball over. I think they had six turnovers in the first half, and
had 13 in the game on a 78 possession game. So really, really not that bad.
Yeah, and so
because Likes only played 20 minutes.
Right. Yeah, I loved it when he came in and he immediately turns the ball.
Immediate
over.
Turnover. Yeah. But he's so great, Michael. He's so great. You can hear.
He is one of the best 5'7" basketball players in the country. I will give him that.
Yeah. I'll say this. He is the best 5'7" basketball player on Miami's roster.
So absolutely. Easily, yeah.
Yeah. Easily.
I'll give him that without thinking too deeply about it. Mm-hmm. So Miami, spread Florida State out. They just abused FSU on the drive, dribble drive. They led to a lot of fouls. They made 57% of their twos, and So in the second half, you know, and that's, you know, one thing that we've talked about before is that even when Florida State's defense is elite, which it's not this year, it's good, you know, but it's certainly not elite. The Hamilton defense is always going to give up a lot, you know, of dribble drives. And it's just because the defense is designed to really make other teams uncomfortable. It's designed to take them out of what they want to do. You know, it's not a gap defense like Virginia, that's really designed to take everything away, take all those drives away to the rim. So we're always just going to have to live with some of that stuff. It should never be as bad as it was against Miami today in the first half. So then in the second half, he came out and we were playing off the ball a little bit. You know, we kind of shrunk the defense down a little bit, and Miami just really didn't have the right adjustment. I thought that Miami was going to come out and take a ton of threes in the second half. They really didn't do that until they got down, I forget if it was like 10 or 12. And, you know, then suddenly they start shooting threes. But the drive, you know, just playing that extra step closer to the basket, the drives just weren't there for Miami. They really struggled to, you know, even get to the rim in the second half. They hardly made any twos. And Florida State, it was an 18-point win, and it probably could have been, you know, 25 or 30 if Florida State could have somehow. There's just a lot of those little, you know, like loose balls that ended up, you know, weird bounce into Miami, and then they hit a three or
a couple of missed layups and dunks by some FSU bigs who I don't know if we'll talk about it or not, but frankly, I thought they stunk. But
we'll hold off for a minute on that. But yeah, so the adjustment was there. The offense pretty much torched Miami the entire game. So it was really that defensive adjustment that we made in the second half that changed the course of the game.
Do you think it's an adjustment that that would maybe be seen again? You know, it's something that I probably would have liked to have seen against UVA when another diminutive point guard was taking our guys off the dribble. Is that an adjustment that maybe you'd look to see again, let's say against a Pittsburgh or perhaps Boston College coming up?
I remember complaining about it against Virginia about not making any changes in the second half. And, you know, this game, Ham clearly did. So, you know,
kudos. He's clearly been listening to the podcast.
Exactly, right. That's what I'm going to say. It's not kudos to Ham for making the adjustment, but kudos to Ham for listening to the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point there. Let's go to the FSU offense then. I mean, when a team shoots, let's see, 53% from the game, 13 of 26 from three, I'd like to see them still shoot a little more free throws. We lost the free throw rate battle again, I think, although this was better, but 16 of 17 from the line. Let me ask you this. How good was FSU's wings and guards in this game? In terms of just what they were able to do, both off the dribble and from distance.
Yeah, it's hard to pick a bad effort in this game, you know, or bad execution by any of those guys. I mean, Polite had a little bit of a rough go turning the ball over, didn't make the one or two threes that he did take, but then he also grabbed like eight rebounds. So, you know, he wasn't the star of the game, but he did play well. But, you know, Wyatt Wilkes comes in, you know, drains another three threes. And I don't know if
Wyatt,
that guy
in the tuck, he certainly has some confidence.
Yeah. I don't know if that guy ever hits the rim. It's like, it's always
it's a good point.
It's a swish or an air ball. You know,
he always hits net. Sometimes it doesn't go through the basket though.
Right. Yeah. It's a special skill he has. So maybe you can talk to him after a game and figure out what's going on there. But Patrick Williams, you know, obviously had another really great game. He did get held out for 10 minutes in the first half with foul trouble, but, you know, he still played well in the second half along with Devin Vassell. You know, Vassell didn't really do much in the first half and comes out and has a really big second half. MJ, I thought, was big, you know, from the tip. you know, as was Forrest, you know. So it's just,
and the MJ three from about 38 feet really seemed to get him going and kind of get some of his rhythm back. The late shot clock three that he made.
Yeah, I know you didn't see the game because you were there, but the on the coverage they were basically showing MJ, and then in the background is Dalvin and what's his name, Gronkowski.
Gronk. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Sitting there celebrating, you know, laughing at MJ hitting that three. Yeah, that was a big possession. You know, we were getting no stops against Miami, and, mm-hmm. and Florida State just had to keep scoring, and then you bury, you know, that 30 footer. So that was fun.
Changing gears slightly, but keeping on the FSU Miami game. So the bench, we scored 99 points. The bench scored 54. And it's not like it's not like Devin came off the bench for this game, right? Like this was the standard starters for Florida State, and the bench scored 54 of the 99. And more, even more than that, so I'm looking at the numbers here. Trent Forrest played 23 minutes. It's got to be one of his lowest of the season. Devin Vassell only played 24 minutes. Patrick Williams, part of this was foul trouble, but played 19. Malik Osborne didn't even play 12 minutes. And MJ was actually the high minute guy here with 30, but even that is down. I asked Hamilton after the game about kind of the toll that these Saturday Mondays take on these guys. He had some interesting words. You should go back, and if you're listening to the podcast, go back to the gamer that Brett for Timeout Nation knew. Brett's been doing a great job for us on the baseball, but he put out the gamer. And I'll have the videos in there of Hamilton. I had some interesting things to say about the Saturday Monday. Did it look to you like Hamilton was actively trying to steal minutes and see if, you know, maybe he could do one of those old like Jimbo passing scrimmages and, you know, get a win in ACC play while also rest guys for the big game on Monday?
Yeah, I was watching the game. I kept looking up and wondering why Trent's on the bench every time I look up. You know, especially in a relatively close game, though Miami was clearly overwhelmed there in the second half. Part of that is that, or part of what enables that was Raekwon Evans. He played great, and
how best about game of that, the year, I think, for him.
Yeah, how about that putback jam that he had? I mean, that. I don't think a lot of people knew that he had that.
He could do that on his tape. We talked about him being a slasher coming out of JUCO, and we're talking about a kid here that tore his hamstring, not just got hurt, but missed all of summer prep. Like, I think he was out 3 months. And listen, I hurt my hamstring back in college running track, and that is not something that your body just bounces back from, not only physically, but mentally. But today was one of the first times where you really saw, like, wow, that guy can be an explosive player in our system.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me a little bit of, let's see here, I'm totally spacing, the point guard you picked in our draft a few years ago. Derwin Kitchen.
Yeah.
So you kind
of. I was even thinking some Jason Rich too, a little bit of Jason Rich in his game.
Yeah, he's like more explosive than Derwin. Mm-hmm. Not quite as
thick, maybe as Rich.
Yeah, as Rich, but yeah, the staff expected big things out of him, and I mean he's always going to be the backup. So I mean we should be clear on that. But
the backup, I think, maybe playing 15 minutes a game, not playing seven.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I think the staff sort of envisioned this game or a version of this game. He also played pretty well against Virginia Tech and in extended minutes. So you can see, you know, why the staff recruited him and why he's getting more minutes, but it does enable just more flexibility, especially when you have this really quick turnaround against Duke, and it allowed Trent to basically play his fewest minutes in ACC play, and Vassell, you know, I think only played like a minute more. So yeah, that was good to see, and it's great to see Raekwon healthy, and anytime you get a put back like that, you're going to get some TV time, so good for him.
Do you want, obviously, I think this is a very different conversation if Florida State does not win this basketball game. But they did, right? They won by 18. They covered the spread. sorry to one of my – I got a buddy that's – actually, he's a really good he knows a lot of kind of deep stats and makes wagers, especially now that it's legal. And I think I cost them some money on this one, because I thought with likes, when I saw likes warming up, I thought for sure that Miami would cover the 15. They still might have had the Green Vipers not made two threes there in the last minute. But
yeah, shout out to Travis Light and Harrison Prieto for
absolutely
for bringing it there,
really scorching the Nets. Is so given how this all played out, I mean, is this what you want to see from a veteran coach who understands the grind of ACC basketball? You want to see him trying to see if we can get wins while buying guys minutes?
Yeah, he clearly knows more about basketball than me. You know, I was pulling my hair out a little bit when the way that he was managing the rotation, and now that I've had an hour to think about it, it's pretty clear what he was doing. And it was the right move. I wrote early on in the game that Miami was not going to continue to make all the crazy shots that they were making, especially early. And I think Ham kind of saw the same thing, that his team eventually was going to start getting stops, and he would even with his backups on the floor, Florida State is better than Miami with their starters. Especially yeah. with Miami kind of dinged up a little bit. So he knew what he was doing. He knew that the game was in hand, even though we were only up three in the first half. So
I kudos. Think at home it helps too, right? Like being able to do this at home versus on the road.
Absolutely. You know, your guys haven't lost in a long time at home. And, you know, they've developed a very well-earned reputation for playing well at home. And barring something, it would have taken something really weird, you know, in retrospect, or look, you know, hindsight's 2020, but it would take something really weird for Miami to have won this game.
Yeah. I think I'm in complete agreement. I think we saw, so the UNC game last Monday was a Saturday, Monday turnaround. Florida State's got a couple of these this year, and they just happened to be, as Ham pointed out in his presser very eloquently, that just coincidence that the second game for us is of these three turnarounds is UNC, Duke, and Louisville. I think that was a game in which we saw what tired legs looks like on this team. You know, guys who are being asked on defense to sell out and generate, you know, turnovers and blocks on, you know, more than almost a quarter of the possessions of the opponent. And you saw what tired shooting looked like in how poorly we shot the ball on Monday against UNC. And I really do think that, you know, you do that in Cameron and you get blown out. So I agree. Kudos to Ham and staff for A, trusting his guys to get it done, and B, having the bench developed and ready and cultivating that confidence in them that they could come in and have the kind of days that they did.
Yeah, and for the conspiracy theorists in the room, I should note that Duke and UNC both only have two of those short turnarounds. And Duke, you'll remember, was the one ACC team that didn't have to open the year against an ACC opponent. So they're actually squeezing right. one more game into the same time period that everybody else is, you right. know, had already played two games. They had only played one, so...
Duke also has that really grinding 9-mile trip home tonight after their game against Carolina, to that road trip home of 9 miles before they get to start preparing for Florida State.
So. Yeah, that's going to be rough, especially if they don't hit all the traffic lights. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they have – I think they've got the cop, you know, the cops
right.
leading the way too. Yeah, it's just as smooth. It's like 8 minutes home.
Right, which really is how it should be. I mean, Duke deserves a police escort everywhere they go.
Yeah, for sure. So let's totally change gears here. Although Duke could still be in this next conversation. I don't know if you caught this today. I'm guessing you do, since you pretty much only watch college basketball on Saturdays. But the NCAA committee released their kind of mid-season reveal of the – they only do the top four seeds. So they do the 1 through 4 seeds in each of the kind of South, Midwest, West, and East brackets. And for the second time now – they've been doing it since 2017. For the second time, Florida State was included in this mid-season reveal. In 2017, Florida State was a 2 seed at the – whatever – it's not really the halfway point, but whatever this early February point is – 2/3 point. They ended up being a 3 seed that year. Historically speaking, teams that are in this midseason reveal do typically stay almost all, I think all of them have actually made the tournament. There hasn't been a team that has fallen completely out of the tournament. most of the teams stay in that top four. Maybe they slip to the five seed. This year, Florida State grabs a three seed, and they are they're right there in the mid kind of three seed pack. So they were 10th on the S curve scale. This was before the Miami game. And so they were that kind of second three seed, if you will, with Maryland and West Virginia being right ahead of them on the S curve, and Seton Hall and Villanova being right below them. Duke was in it as the top two seed. Louisville's also a two seed above Florida State. As you know, Florida State beat Louisville. Did you have any thoughts coming away with this? Or, is this something that you'd be kind of happy with if this was how it turned out in March?
Yeah, I thought that Florida State would be a three. I was hoping that they would be the highest three rather than but that's picking nits at this point. I thought West Virginia.
So one spot higher in Maryland's spot, I guess.
Yeah, I thought West Virginia. I was a little surprised they were two, but then they lost today, so they will no longer be a two. So Florida State will be.
Yeah, they got beat pretty bad, right?
Yeah, by Oklahoma, which is not a very good basketball team.
Probably not even a tournament team.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's good news. I want Florida State to be a two seed. You know, Florida State's never been a two seed. I'd really like to see that happen. The math is a little better for two seeds than it is for three seeds. So you obviously want to
certainly
be
the first round math is a lot better.
Yeah, but I think the take home for me from the reveal is that there wasn't something funny happening, like the reveal comes out and Florida State's like the third, fourth seed or something, something just,
sure.
That I think is the fear. So Bracket Matrix, which we follow along, seems to have Florida State pegged in the right spot. I mean, it's in the exact spot that this reveal showed. So I think we have some relatively trustworthy data, just following Bracket Matrix to the finish line into the ACC tournament to see where Florida State's going to be.
What do you think, and I don't mind, I'll take a stab at this too. I've been sort of an amateur. I've never actually put together a bracketology, but I've definitely followed it deeply for a long time. All those years of FSU on the bubble really kind of made me a bit of an RPI and now net expert, I suppose. If you want to go back, we don't even use the RPI anymore, but that series on Tomahawk Nation a couple of years ago on the RPI was a great look at how that and even the net, which is sort of a derivative of the RPI, can really be manipulated. If you ever want to go back and look at that, you want FSU to be a two. I want FSU to be a two. I think a one seed's probably off the table at this point, unless maybe Florida State won literally the rest of their games. Do you think Florida State needs to win Monday against Duke in order? Like, can they lose against Duke and still get a two seed?
Yeah, it'll be tough. I mean, Florida State losing at Duke is not going to be, it's not a tough loss. Right, it's not going to hurt. I mean, they might drop a spot or something. It's not a big deal. But you also have to pick up really big wins to get to the two line. The one line, the when they made the announcement, they did say that the four teams on the one line, there's a significant break between them and the two seeds. So unless something,
and just I don't think I've said them actually. So the four teams for folks that aren't sitting at a computer right now are Baylor, Kansas, Gonzaga, San Diego State. In that order are the four one seeds.
Yeah, and San Diego State plays nobody, so it's if they lose,
they're
going to
be a one seed if they go undefeated.
Yeah, and Gonzaga doesn't play a lot. They play at St. Mary's tonight, which they've had some trouble there in the past, but I just don't see them really losing that game. So yeah, the one seeds are pretty clear. So we want the two seeds to lose. We obviously want Florida State to keep winning, but in order to move up, the two seeds need to lose, and two of those teams are in the ACC. So there's just not a lot of a wiggle room for good things to happen outside of Florida State's control. I think for Florida State to sort of push their way into the two seed, they're going to have to do it themselves, and it's not going to be because of other teams losing. It's because we beat Duke or we beat Louisville and then beat Louisville or Duke in the ACC tournament or something like that. It's going to take a couple big wins and no bad losses going down the stretch.
Yeah, this is sort of the byproduct of the ACC being down, right? Like, on the plus side, Florida State's 20-3. We really don't have a lot of – like, you look at the home schedule, and outside of the Louisville game, maybe Syracuse, I don't know. They've seemed to have shot well in spurts, but there's not a lot of games where you feel like, great, we just – this is a loss, you know, coming in, this is an L. But on the downside, like you're saying, there's not a lot of opportunities to really build that heft up at the top of your resume. And unfortunately, Purdue, who it does look like they're going to pull out a road win against Indiana, which is a bit surprising. Purdue has kind of been up and down, and that's supposed to be one of the feathers on Florida State's cap this year. UF is doing their standard underachieving under Mike White. So as much as it sucks to root for the Gators, like, you know, if UF were, let's say, a 4 seed, Florida State would have a better resume right now that would maybe make them a 2 seed. And that's why you see a team like Louisville, who did in fact lose at home to Florida State, but is a couple spots ahead on the S curve. So I'm with you in that. I don't think a loss to Duke hurts, but you sort of just miss out on one of your few remaining opportunities. I do think though that a sweep of Louisville would be big in the eyes of the committee. I think if you're able to get a sweep and then, let's say, knock off Duke in the ACC tournament and get at least to the championship game. So that would give you the road wins over UF and Louisville, the neutral site win over Purdue. Tennessee's fallen off a cliff, so don't even mention them. And then the second win over Louisville and the win over Duke on a neutral site or you know, of course, in Cameron. But that would, I think, move the needle. But I don't know. Florida State, like you said, has work to do to get up there and can't drop any of these winnable games at home.
Yeah, and then you also have to it's like, how many games can we lose outside of Duke and Louisville? So say we beat Louisville. We still have to go at NC State, at Clemson, at Notre Dame, you know. So there's some losable games.
I think you can lose at NC State or at Notre Dame and I mean, those are teams that have 14, 15 games. I don't know. Road wins or road losses are typically not frowned upon that heavily by the metrics or the committee. Obviously, though, there's not a lot separating these 2 seeds and 3 seeds, so even something that's not frowned upon is a missed opportunity. All right, why don't we take a break? Michael's going to go and watch some film on Duke real quick. And get ready for this next segment where we are going to be previewing the what is likely going to be a top 10 matchup between FSU and Duke in Cameron on Monday night.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We are back. Thanks for listening. If you're just tuning in, if somehow you skipped the Miami part, we said that, you know, great offense, defense with a wonderful adjustment made by Hamilton at halftime. We talked about the selection reveal, and now we're looking ahead to Monday night in Cameron Indoor Stadium against the Duke Blue Devils, who do still have a game to play between this recording. And then they've got a matchup with UNC. Michael, just generally speak, last year Duke had the star power with Zion and RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish. We saw them come into Tallahassee and win a fun, well-played basketball game at the buzzer on a three by Reddish. What does Duke look like this year?
Yeah, the one big player that they returned from that team is Trey Jones. Yeah, he did not decide to go pro after his freshman year. Probably a good idea. He couldn't shoot. This year he's made like 35%, a little less than that. He's still running the team. He's tough guard. He's a good player. But the problem with Duke is Vernon Carey. That guy is just a load. He might be the player of the year for the nation, He's certainly first team all ACC. He's 6'10", 270. You know, his dad was an offensive tackle in the NFL. You know, he's kind of built the same way except taller. He's just a really big guy, and he's not Zion athletic, but he's pretty athletic. And the place that he's going to give Florida State trouble is that he is one of the best rebounders in the nation, and he's also, there's only one player in the entire country that draws more fouls than Vernon Carey. Watch from the Miami game, our bigs are not quite ready to get in there and carve out space and battle and take care of things one-on-one. So it's going to be one of those situations where when Florida State is game plan, I'm not sure which assistant gets the scout for Duke, but when Florida State is developing that game plan, are you selling out to stop Vernon Carey, or are you letting Vernon Carey kind of get his and trying to stop Trey Jones and Cassius Stanley and Wendell Moore and, you know, all those other guys?
All those other five stars that they have?
Yeah, Trent was the 70th rated player in the country, you know, which was a really, really important recruit for Florida State to get somebody who is rated that high nationally. And Duke has eight guys who are rated, you know, more highly than Trent. So they don't have Zion. They don't have Cam Reddish and RJ Barrett. But this is an incredibly talented team. They still have 3 5 stars and a bunch of 4 stars that, you know, a couple of them hardly even play. So yeah, it's a talented team. It's going to be a tough bet, and Florida State's probably going to be a double digit underdog. So we shall see.
Yeah, the rebounding concerns of Vernon Carey are real, and they're spectacular. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's grabbing 13% of the misses that when he's on the court, and almost 30%, like 26.5% of. So grabbing 13% of Duke's misses, I'm sorry, when he's on the court, 26.5% of the opponent's misses. So for a team that, like you talked, our bigs, they were not good against Miami. They've had moments where they've been okay, but they certainly are not. We don't have Fiondu coming off the bench. We don't have kind of just the sheer length and rim protection that Chris Camaji provided for 4 years, really. I know that Camaji got pushed out of the way a lot, maybe his freshman, sophomore year, but he still was always blocking shots and making someone think twice about going to the rim. We just don't have that this year. And so let me ask you, whoever has the scout for Florida State, you know, do you swarm get Carey and hope that the refs aren't calling it tight? By the way, in Cameron against the guy who draws 7.8 fouls per 40, playing a team who loves to foul. Or do you, if you had the scout, is that what you would say? Swarm Carey and make the others beat us? Or see if you can just let Carey get his twos and hope maybe that we're having a hot night from three and hope that nobody else really goes off for Duke?
No, the thing that I like about swarming Carey, and this is probably where my scout would lead, is that he's so good rebounding out of his zone. You know, he gets a lot of rebounds that he has no business getting. He's 270. He when he's jumping for rebounds and he's making body contact with people, it's throwing everybody kind of out of their space, and he's just able to get a lot of rebounds that he has no business getting. He's got really long arms, so if we don't swarm him and we just leave him one-on-one, then I think that he's just going to have that much more freedom of space to go and get some of those rebounds. The great thing about swarming them is at least you've got bodies, you know, on at least two sides to try to keep them from cleaning up all those misses. Duke is not a great shooting team. You know, Trey Jones is, you didn't even have to guard Trey Jones last year. He can shoot a little bit this year, but he's still not a great shooter. Cassius Stanley's not a great shooter. Matthew Hurt is a problem. He's 6'9". Freshman, five star. He's made 40% of his threes. He can be a problem. They've got some guys who come off the bench that are probably better shooters than their starters.
Yeah, Joey Baker. is one guy that, you know, if you're looking for that, like, who's going to be the random guy off the bench who goes off and makes five threes.
Yeah. So I think you've got to try to take Vernon Carey, you know, do what you can against Carey and kind of hope that the refs aren't, you know, feeling particularly frisky with their whistles. They're going to let, you know, since Duke and Florida State are both really big athletic teams, maybe the refs will just let them play. You know, I'm not holding out hope for that. But, and then when Florida State has the ball, you know, Duke has a similar defensive style to Florida State in that they're really trying to pressure people, and you have the opportunity to drive if you can. You know, they typically have NBA athletes, you know, five stars who they count on to defend one-on-one. So we really need Trent and MJ to be driving the ball and drawing fouls and making that defense collapse. And then the silver or potential silver lining would be, you know, what if we can get Carey into foul trouble because he's having to help off, you know, some of these other guys.
Yeah. Obviously, foul trouble would be a huge difference maker in this game, probably for both teams, right? Like, if someone like Devin Vassell or Trent Forrest gets into early foul trouble, that's a huge problem for us. But, yeah, if a Vernon Carey picks up a couple of quick ones or maybe three early in the second half, that could be big. I wonder, too, about you mentioned that Duke's not a good shooting team. That kind of extends to the free throw line, particularly in some of their, like, in their close games or losses. And I know we are typically a free throw rate is what we're talking about, but I think it's at least worth noting. I'm almost assuming that Florida State is going to send Duke to the line quite a few times. I would be surprised if Duke attempts fewer than 30 free throws in this game. Fewer than 25 would really surprise me, and I'd expect them to shoot closer to 30. Against Kansas, where they won by 2 points earlier in the year, Duke was 14 of 23 from the stripe, so that's 60%. And then against Stephen F. Austin, you know, Stephen F. Austin came in, and you know, of course, Duke was taking them more lightly than they will a top 10 Florida State team. But again, Duke got to the line 40 times. They made 24, right at that 60% mark. And then against Clemson, which was on the road in a game that really Duke has no business losing, but when you have freshmen that go on the road in ACC play, sometimes things happen. And Duke was 10 of 20. So they only shot 50% there. And I do think that, you know, I hate to rely on this, but if we're able to get a night where they're closer to 60% from the free throw line than they are 80% or 85%, that could be a big difference if we are sending them to the line as often as I think we probably will. What about when Florida State's on offense? Is there a player that you expect to have maybe a mismatch or to, you know, Duke's a pretty shooter friendly gym. Typically teams do, you know, they got good sight lines, good rims. Is there something you'd be looking for Florida State when they're on offense?
Yeah, I think that Raekwon Gray could have a good game. You know, this should be his style of game. It's going to be up and down. There's some guys on Duke that he can kind of overpower a little bit, and then there's some, if he can get some of the bigs on him, he can go by him. Same holds true for Patrick Williams. You know, this is I think going to be his style of game. So we're obviously going to see, you know, our big three of Forrest, Vassell, and MJ Walker. We need all those to have good games. But outside of those three, I would say that Patrick Williams and Raekwon Gray have the potential to, you know, be the difference makers in this game. You know, Duke has, you know, outside of Jones and Carey, they have Cassius Stanley, who was a borderline five star, and even though he's a freshman, he's actually a year older than Devin Vassell. I don't even know how that works, but he's the same age as Raekwon Gray, who's in his third year in the system. Wendell Moore is you know, another five-star kid who, good size, hasn't been great this year, has dealt with some injuries. But I think that Patrick Williams and Raekwon Gray could pick on him maybe a little bit. And then, you know, Matthew Hurt, who's 6'9" and you know, weighs about 100 pounds, there's potential for you know, Williams and Gray to go at him as well. So yeah, there's some matchups there. If Williams and Gray have both have good games, then I think, you know, I like our chances. If we're not able to get, you know, one of our role players to have a big game, then, you know, Duke is probably rolling anyway. So we'll see if PW or Gray can kind of step it up for this. It's you know, obviously going to be a big atmosphere for Williams, who's a freshman, but we'll see.
Yeah. Two things I think that are interesting there that I kind of wanted to comment on. Raekwon Gray, he could have a good game. I think this is a game that will suit his style, there's a lot of big bodies banging around. So I'm hopeful that he won't pick up some of those "I'm big, you're small" fouls that he tends to get, because he's going to be going against guys who are 230, 250, and in Vernon Carey's case, 270. So I like that call out. Patrick Williams is interesting because, you know, he's from Charlotte. He's from West Charlotte. And him and Wendell Moore played a lot in high school. And for most of their careers, Wendell Moore was the guy that went to the, you know, higher economic community school. And he was the one that kind of was on the AAU circuit more, the five-star throughout. And certainly Duke was on him early. But there were a lot of rumblings going into their senior year that actually he might not even be the best player in Charlotte. Forget being the best player in North Carolina. And that talk was coming from folks who were seeing Patrick Williams develop at a pretty rapid rate. You know, Patrick is a guy who's young for his class, and he really was starting to put all the tools together. You know, I was talking to Pat about this today, and I don't want to put his business out there, but you get the sense that this game does mean something to him. And of course, on camera, folks are going to – they're well-trained and know what they need to say. But you do get the sense that this is a meaningful game for Pat Williams. He was not offered by Duke until very, very late in the process. And, you know, I don't think he was offered by UNC either. And if he was, it also was after sort of he'd already blown up on the scene his senior year. So I would be interested if Pat can stay out of early foul trouble, and if he can keep some of the just like I want to show out, you know, jitters maybe down. I could see him really have a big game. He knows a lot of these guys and knows how they, you know, some of their tendencies. So that's a great call out there. Do you think is it weird that Pat, like, I feel like Pat would be a great perfect fit in UNC's system or any system really?
Yeah, Pat's game is an NBA game, and that you can make that fit in any system. It's kind of weird that Duke and UNC both whiffed on him. Duke is used to being able to get in on guys late and still pull them, like Cassius Stanley. They got on him really late, and you know, one of the huge advantages that that Mike Krzyzewski has is, you know, being associated with Team USA. So he always talks about his patriotic duty to America and coaching these young five stars who are juniors in high school. Mm-hmm. You know, but the great thing is that even when Duke isn't recruiting these guys directly, he still gets tons of time, you know, during all of the tryouts and the practices and the games with the game's best players. And so it's really weird that he totally whiffed on one right in his backyard. You know, maybe he was too busy doing the saluting the flag or something to notice that Patrick Williams was a really great player right in his backyard. But he definitely whiffed. It's a good thing for Florida State. Patrick Williams kind of a, you know, Florida State's had success recruiting North Carolina, so he's certainly not the first guy, but he's the best one.
Yeah, he has, and he's really started to come into his own a bit too. You're starting to see him, I think, be maybe hunt that corner three a little bit more. He's certainly been aggressive on defense and jumping passing lanes and getting blocked shots. So I think you're really starting to see the game slow down a little bit for him. And I'm excited to see where his game might go over the next month. You know, remains to be seen if we'll see him in Garnet and Gold for a sophomore year. I don't think it's impossible, but I'll tell you this, that Jim Larrañaga after the game today said basically, you know, that's a pro basketball player right there. Everything about his game is NBA, and that if Larrañaga was an NBA exec, he would be pounding the table to get that kid on his team. So, you know, take that comment for what it's worth. Maybe we'll shift gears here to just some news and notes, kind of cover the spectrum here. You mentioned Team USA. So Scotty Barnes actually was announced that he was invited and will take part in the Hoop Summit coming up in April, which is the USA versus the World basketball game. I believe he's the first recruit since John Isaac that Florida State has had in the Hoop Summit, right?
Yeah, and I think everybody knew he was going to make that team, and he made it, and so good for him. It's a Nike sponsored event, and he's going to a Nike school, so it's not a surprise that he's on the roster. It'll be great to see, you know, how he plays. You know, he's obviously on a totally loaded team with Cade Cunningham there at Montverde, but it'll be interesting to see how he plays with you know, Jalen Green and Kessler and Evan Mobley and all those guys, you know, that are the top players in the nation, and you know, is he able to as a non-dominant scorer, like, is he able to really flex his game? I think he will do. I think he's going to do a fantastic job. And even though he probably won't lead Team USA in scoring ever, he will be one of the key players. So it'll be fun to watch. You know, it is high school, so you kind of got to take it with a grain of salt. But
yeah, no, that's for sure. Some of those games can get rather sloppy at times. I really like what Hamilton's been doing lately, and I think CY has been a big influence here. But, grabbing a lot of these kids that are really Trent Forrest ranked, right? Like, we're talking the 50 to 150 type of kids, and supplementing them with one John Isaac, one Pat Williams, one Dwayne Bacon, one Scotty Barnes a year. I mean, sure, we'd love to have Pat stay next year and play with Scotty, but even if you don't, to build that kind of depth and consistency with some of those mid four stars and find some gems that didn't play the AAU circuit, like Evan Vassell and Fiondu, and then bring in that one kid now a year, it seems like, that is that upper echelon, I think has made a huge difference in terms of our ability to stay in that top, you know, five or six teams in the ACC. And speaking of those kind of 50 to 150 type kids, maybe even a little bit better than that, actually, we had a recruit at the Miami blowout, right? The game today.
Yeah. So Dallin Coleman, he goes by Debo Coleman. He's one of the top 50 guys, and he's a junior. So top 50 guys in the 2021 class. He's a Florida kid. So really important to get. You don't want him to turn into Patrick Williams, you know, and have us miss out on him. So it was good to have him in. He visited Florida. This was an unofficial visit. He visited Florida last week. They didn't have a game, so he was like there on a Sunday or something. Probably best to have him not there in a game, so he can't watch them lose. So it was good to have him there. And Florida State scored 99 points. He's a shooting guard. He's a kind of the classic Ham combo guard throwback, you know, in that he is, we could turn him into a point guard.
He's the Isaiah Swan model.
Yeah. He's not a great shooter, but he's got a good stroke. So hopefully that 3-point thing will kind of come on, but yeah, he's a good player. It's from Callahan. So, which is north of Jacksonville, I believe, like mm-hmm. right along the Georgia border.
Yep.
Yeah. So kind of a local kid, and all the schools that you would expect are in on him. So all the schools in the South, Georgia Tech, Florida, Clemson, Alabama.
The schools in the South below the UNC and Duke level, right?
Exactly. Basically. Yeah. So yeah. It, you know, who knows if he's, you know, obviously all high school kids want to be offered by everybody. And, but it's hard to say at this point if he's, kind of looking in on one of these schools more seriously than others, or if he's still just slow playing and see what happens, which is my guess on where he's at right now.
Even still, though, it's good. You can't, Jacksonville produces a decent amount of talent, and you can't not have kids like this come in, right? Like, I think it's a bad look to do the UNC Duke with Pat Williams, where you don't really even pay attention to the kid until he's a senior year. And now that school out in West Charlotte kind of feels a little bit slighted, you know? So I think it's great to bring him in. Like you said, scored 99 points, made 13 threes, had a lot of high-flying dunks and alley-oops. So great, great game to be at. And really, it's just a sign. I mean, we've had some top 50 kids now coming in for a few games. So that 2021 class, obviously, you need to start get guys putting pen to paper. But that class looks like it has the potential to at least continue the kind of uptick in talent that Leonard Hamilton and Stan and CY have been able to generate over the last few years. One other note here, and for a lot of you folks who also listen to the podcast and also head over to Tomahawk Nation, you may have seen that Bud Elliott, the fearless founder of Tomahawk Nation, announced that he is going to be leaving and taking a new adventure and a new challenge elsewhere. Michael, I know you've been with Tomahawk for a long time. Any just parting words or thoughts?
No, I mean, I'll be excited to see what he's doing next. Good for him. You know, this will not impact the podcast in any way. You know, Bud's kind of been one foot out the door for a while now. And the great thing is he always, when I first started there, ever since then, he's given me and then me and Matt like total control of the basketball coverage. So you know, we never had to worry about anything with him, and so nothing's going to change. You know, 11 years ago there really was no basketball coverage at Tomahawk Nation because the writer, True Cubby was his name, he was really good, but he took a job that he was no longer able to blog. And so they had these you know, fan posts and fan shots, which are kind of marginalized over on the side of the page, and anybody can write them. And so I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to cover the basketball team through these fan shots. And people started paying attention. And then I get an email from Bud one day, and the entire email said, "You are now the basketball writer, Bud." And that was it. And so, you know, 11 years later, still here. I snatched Matt up a couple years after I started. So, it's been a good run. So thanks, Bud, to allowing us to do all this fun stuff in Tomahawk Nation's name, and you know, best of luck and whatever you're doing next.
Yeah, no, well said. That's a good story. I will echo those thoughts and say thanks for really, if you're listening, Bud, thanks for always having that mind on the data, you know, the really data analysis and A, giving us carte blanche to do what we wanted to do with the basketball side of things, and also but keeping, you know, making sure that it was always with a data-driven mindset, and that we were you know, looking past just the standard points per game and rebounds per game. So I thank you for the platform, and it's been great to have it grow as Florida State's basketball program has grown to new heights. We will certainly be wishing you well in your new venture. And I know sometimes, Bud, we bump into each other in airports, as both of our schedules have us traveling a lot. So if I see you in ATL or other airports, we'll grab a beer. All right. Other than that, so it's going to be a fun watch basketball the rest of the day. Watch that Duke UNC game, and then come up with Duke Florida State on Monday. For Michael, I am Matt. And we'll talk after the Duke game.